You're listening to a Clare FM podcast. Morning Focus broadcasts weekdays from 9am to 12 midday.
The panel are gathering to review the week that was. We'll meet them in a couple of minutes' time. At this stage, though, I usually play a little piece of an audio montage to remind you of some of the big news stories of the past 7 days. But in truth, only one story has dominated.
We're in an extremely serious and unprecedented situation. The government has lost control of events and is in complete disarray. It's been evident for weeks that the Prime Minister's deal did not have the confidence of this House.
That's right.
Yet she ploughed on regardless, reiterating, this is the only deal available.
Effectively, the Prime Minister's been drowning politically, and Angela Merkel's thrown buckets of water at her. It's not a good position to be in. I don't think Theresa May can lead us forward now.
As Margaret Thatcher went in 1990 and Ted Heath resigned in 1975, so the message today to Theresa May is that she has lost her moral and political authority, even if she's got a slightly bigger number.
Whilst I'm grateful for that support, a significant number of colleagues did cast a vote against me, and I've listened to what they said. Following this ballot, we now need to get on with the job of delivering Brexit for the British people and building a better future for this country.
I do find it uncomfortable that there's an impression, perhaps in the UK, that it's for the EU to propose solutions. It is the UK leaving the EU.
Always willing to offer clarifications, explanations, and we can discuss what form that takes, but what we won't be doing as the European Union is renegotiating the withdrawal agreement.
The week as it was in Brexit. At the start of the week, Jeremy Corbyn criticising Theresa May for withdrawing the planned Brexit deal vote from the House of Commons. Then there was the motion of no confidence in her, tabled by the likes of Andrew Bridgen saying he wouldn't support her, and by Jacob Rees-Mogg, who insisted she had to go even after she won. You heard from Theresa May herself as well before, through a translator, European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker, reflecting on last evening's meeting in Brussels, at which it seems few solutions have been reached in terms of trying to rectify the impasse, and right at the end, our own Taoiseach Leo Varadkar on the EU's ongoing support for Ireland. Our Friday panel are with us in studio, and I'm joined at the moment by two of them thus far. Number three will be with us very shortly, but Dermot Hayes from Ennis, part of the Labour Party, and Tony Killeen, former Fianna Fáil TD and Minister for Clare as well. Good morning to you both. Morning. And thanks very much for joining us this morning. Well, Tony, not a quiet week.
No. Dermot is really from Corrifin, by the way.
I know. I should be saying that. You're living around.
Yeah, it's an interesting week. You had a superb contributor on yesterday morning, an English media guy. And
Bernard Purcell from the Irish World.
Exactly. And he said there were nine scenarios. And I had already come up with seven, but really there were only three.
Okay.
But, I mean, fundamentally there are three. One is that Theresa May's deal gets accepted. The numbers are really negative on that. And in my view, it can only happen if the Labour Party in the UK, and a big chunk of them, two-thirds of them about, vote for it. Mm. Seems very unlikely, I must say. Another is that the whole thing goes back so far that, by whatever means, they're forced to have another referendum, and that the Remains win the referendum, which is another question as well. So that there are two scenarios.
Yes.
And the third, which is still looming quite large there, is that they crash out. And if you look at the numbers in the Parliament, in the House of Commons, you'd have to say that the risk of a crash out is very big.
And ironically, if that happens, crashing out, hard Brexit, border checks returning, all of that would have been caused by the backstop, the very measure designed to avoid a hard border in the first place.
Wasn't the backstop a horrendous name to call it? Back and stop are both negative. You know, it could have been called the safety net, or I don't know where that term came from, but it's turned out
an
to be
an open
very
border
unhelpful.
Agreement. And well, that wouldn't have gone
have
too
no
well
doubt the sense of triumphalism in Dublin alienated the DUP further than they needed to be. If the reaction in Dublin had been a bit more muted, I believe that the reaction of the Ulster farmers and the Ulster business interests would have made it a bit easier for the DUP to live with it. But there was such triumphalism, particularly from the Taoiseach, I must say, extraordinary level of it, that the DUP were beaten into a corner, and they're against this deal, and their 10 votes, I think, can be counted against it. You know, it'd be astounding if they managed to come around to vote for Theresa May's deal.
And yet there are some who will suggest that when push comes to shove, they won't vote against the government because they love the position they're in as kingmakers, in effect. Dermot Hayes, in terms of... It's been an extraordinary week, and yet very little has changed.
Well, now I've been reading the Financial Times. It is rarely I read the Financial Times, but I was reading them this morning.
Would go with your left-wing philosophies.
Yeah, of course. But for the UK to leave the EU, they have to do nothing. And on the 29th of March, they will leave under the Act, right?
Yes.
They'll have to do nothing between now and the 29th of March, but they'll just leave and crash out, as Tony said, and that'll be the end of it. They'll move on, and we'll move on, and Ireland will suffer tragically, you know. But at the same time, Mrs. May has 117 knives stuck in her back now, as from this week coming, right, with 117 people voting against her. So as where she's going to go between now and next March, I suspect that she will resign gracefully.
Before March or after?
No, I'd say before March, yeah, because it's going to happen.
Does she not want to deliver Brexit? I mean, has this not been her sole issue, it seems, in terms of what she's been trying to do?
Well, she's a Remainer. We all know she's a Remainer. Very clearly, distinctly, that she's a Remainer.
Yes, but we also know that Brexit means Brexit, and she wants a strong and stable country, and all the other little sound bites that she has come out with. She wants to deliver Brexit. I think we have to give her that.
Oh, I mean, Tony mentioned there that there's about 9 scenarios, but I reckon there's about maybe 4, perhaps, scenarios. Mm. But this element, anyway, they have to do nothing between now and the 29th of March. So, I mean, effectively, that she will have done what she has done. She'll have delivered Brexit now. Okay. The fallout is later. It's going to fall out next year or the year after. We don't know, and Ireland is going to suffer, I'm afraid.
Yeah. You were making a point, Tony, before we came on. Which I'll try and get you to elaborate upon now, and it does influence what's happened in Ireland this week, and we will get on to the confidence and supply agreement. But I asked you, when there was turmoil amidst the Tories, if it reminded you of turmoil in your own Fianna Fáil government of 2011, but it put you on a different track. Talk to you a little bit more.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about the similarities with the 2011 vote of confidence in Brian Cowan. What it reminded me of was in November 2010 the Green Party announced that they were pulling out of government. And that meant that the government would collapse. Now, they did indicate that they'd back the finance bill and the budget. And there was a meeting of Fianna Fáil ministers, and I was one of them. I was only a senior minister for 10 months, actually, but I was there for a very interesting and challenging 10 months, as it turned out. Yeah. I was a junior minister for a long time before that, so a lot of people forget that that's how short a time I was actually sitting at cabinet. But there was a discussion among the Fianna Fáil ministers, and there was a very clear view, insofar as you can be certain in political circles, that the most advantageous position for Fianna Fáil would have been for Brian Cowan to go to Áras an Uachtaráin and cause a general election, because he no longer had, in theory, a majority in the Parliament.
This is November 2010.
Yeah, and that was before the IMF would have come in, and you obviously would have based your campaign on a small country being beaten up by Europe and all that kind of thing. It would have been very interesting, and looking back at it now, I think, about a dozen to 15 of my colleagues who got beaten in that election would have survived. But the counter view, which was held very strongly by Brian Cowan and the late Brian Lenehan, was that there was a serious situation that to throw the country into the turmoil of an election, which we knew would be won either by Fine Gael or by Fine Gael and Labour, would still take a couple of months, and that really there was an enormous risk that the whole system would collapse during that period, and that, for example, public servants wouldn't be paid and social welfare recipients, all of that would happen,
and
the banks would have no money. And the decision that was made was to stick it out, deliver the budget, deliver the four-point plan, and then let, whether it was Fine Gael won the election or Fine Gael and Labour, let them take over, at least with a pathway, an agreement with the IMF. And I think, and I'm sort of moving on from Brexit now, I think that meeting and the fallout from it and around it informs Micheál Martin's decision to not collapse the government now.
Why are we precarious, you reckon?
I do, because...
Do you think that precarious?
I do, because I think that...
Well, the deal was up. I mean, Fianna Fáil had the option, obviously.
I think that the senior people in Parliament and in the departments believe that the likeliest scenario now in the UK is that they crash out. And you couldn't... I mean, it'd be impossible for Ireland to deal with that if you were in the middle of a turmoil of a general election, or worse still, if the general election was over and the figures were approximately the same as they are now, which they probably would be.
You've
stayed. They are playing that card now, don't they?
I don't think they are.
They're already cohabitating, so they might as well get married and get on with it.
Well, you see, there are such fundamental differences between the approaches of the two parties.
You think so?
I do. And the more I was in Dublin, the more I realised that the approaches are very different, and they're actually historically based, so they're very hard to get out of.
And there's
a big chunk of Fianna Fáil that probably should be in the Labour Party, and there's a tiny chunk that probably should comfortably fit in Fine Gael, and maybe there's a few that should be in Sinn Féin for
them.
Time. And that as well.
PD
bit, I would say, should really be in Fine Gael by right, you know.
I take it you wouldn't count yourself as among those. You're describing them.
I count myself comfortably. I don't know if any of you remember, but there was a really funny incident in the Dáil when Joe Higgins was on one of his fantastic rants, and it was really brilliant. He was a great orator, and Bertie got up. And Bertie was Taoiseach then, and in the middle of one of Bertie's convoluted five sentence half hour speeches, he said that he was a socialist.
Oh, you did,
that's right. Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was sitting where I could see Joe Higgins' face, and it was a study to behold. You know, I think really basically what I'm saying is Micheál Martin is informed by how close to the brink we were in 2010, 2011, and he thinks that with the level of discord and disagreement and lack of direction in London, that a collapse is a strong possibility.
The astute amongst you will have noticed our third panellist is with us, and that's Michael McNamara, former Clare Labour TV. I'm struck by that story because your life would have been potentially different if Tony and others had persuaded the Taoiseach to go to the polls in November 2010 as opposed to the election of 4 months later. But coming back to this week, your thoughts on, I suppose, where it goes from here in terms of Brexit, Michael?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I tend to agree with Tony. I mean, I think the most likely outcome now, I mean, there's, I think, increasingly just two options. Either they crash out or they stay in. I mean, this deal is not going anywhere. It's finished. And it's almost like, you know, there was a great movie over the last summer, and maybe inspired by Brexit, about D-Day and actor Cillian Murphy, Dunkirk,
yes.
And it was snapshots, and you know, day by day, hour by hour, and I think that's almost where we're at now. You could almost see a movie at some point, or a documentary at some point in the future, and the opening scene is that vote of no confidence when it was 117 of her own MPs wouldn't back her. I mean, that's more than a third.
How long is the movie in terms of its ending? Is it the 29th of March? Is it sooner than that?
Well, I mean, you know, will they have a government then? If they don't have a government, then they fall out. Literally just fall over the cliff. I mean, anything could happen. I'm not entirely sure I buy Tony. I mean, I do think it's going to be catastrophic for Ireland if there's a hard, in the short term. I mean, who knows what happens in the long term? I mean, there's been Viking invasions, English invasions, the Celts came at some point, and you know, life goes on eventually.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't think it's going to be good in the short term. I mean, like, you know, the industry that Clare is most dependent on, I dare say, is agriculture still by a long shot, because Martin Ireland's just down the road. Go down there now and you meet people who bought cattle in the spring and they're selling them now. And like, I heard one man asked him, did they leave you much? And he said, well, they left me their dung.
Yeah.
And literally, like, people are getting maybe €5 a head more than they paid for them in the spring, but they've had veterinary fees, they've had to pay fertiliser, everything, and they have to live. I mean, what do you live on in the meantime? You know, I know people say farmers grouse and they complain, but it is particularly hard time for the beef sector, and that's the most prevalent sector in Clare.
As somebody who wants to be a European parliamentarian at the end of next May, what do you make of the way Brussels is handling this? On one hand, the Taoiseach, as we heard in our montage a few minutes ago, is very pleased with the support that the EU is giving to Ireland. On the other hand, there is a cohort, particularly cross-channel, who feel that they're overplaying their hand and forcing Britain into this nightmare.
I heard Tony at the beginning saying that if you know, Ireland, Dublin had played it differently, maybe the DUP would have come on board. Honestly, I think there was absolutely nothing that Dublin could do to get the DUP on board. I mean, segments of, like, the unionist community in Northern Ireland, absolutely, but the DUP positioned themselves from the start that they were going to use this as a wedge to divide, I think, Ulster from the remainder of the island of Ireland, and they're quite happy that this wedge would happen. I think because it reinforces their sense of being besieged, but also of being different and being entirely separate,
and
this slide maybe towards a borderless country where borders didn't matter and identities maybe didn't matter as much is something that I don't think they particularly. It's not part of their political philosophy. Mm. I would worry that Dublin and the Irish position is being used in Europe to try to force the Brits into a deal that they can't accept, and that obviously results in no deal, and we're the ones who suffer most. I think more even than the United Kingdom, I think we're the ones who suffer most from a no deal scenario. So I think there's a danger that this hardline position that the government were fated for at the start, and it's only fair that Ireland sets out its position and seeks to achieve it,
of course,
but that we almost put ourselves on a pedestal, and that's being used now a little bit by Europe, who ultimately, it's not about teaching Britain a lesson, but it's about saying very clearly that we cannot have anybody outside with a better deal than those who are inside, otherwise the union breaks up. And I mean, it is, you know, this is an existential issue, I think, for the French and for the Germans in particular. They will do everything that is required to protect the Union. And I don't mean the Union of Great Britain and Northern Ireland.
I mean the
European Union.
Kevin, just say that the business of Britain and the Northern Ireland have come together, really united, along with of Southern Ireland as well, come united to back the agreement. I'm surprised that influence isn't as strong as
that's
it could be.
That's an interesting point, yeah. And I've been listening to a lot of particularly BBC coverage this week, and you do hear some from businesses, but it's almost kind of an afterthought. They get very caught up, I feel, in the political machinations, the will she go, the will she stay, which I know is very important, but...
But they have a lot of power at the same time. Businesses have a lot of power in Britain and elsewhere around the world.
They have a huge amount of power in Britain, Dermot, you're absolutely right, but Northern Ireland, for some reason, I remember hearing somewhere, so it must be true if I heard it, but it was on, I heard it on the radio, that we in the Labour Party obviously don't get much donations from business in Ireland, but generally the political parties in Ireland are hugely funded by businesses, as they are in the UK, but Northern Ireland, interestingly, isn't reliant so much on, they don't, for whatever reason, maybe it's because they don't matter. I mean, how could you fund somebody that's not even going to sit in Parliament? And they're elected to do so. I mean, why would you bother?
The fundraiser in America, the Finnish, you know, Sinn Féin.
Well, that's the Shinners. Well, they fundraise in lots of places. Yeah. But I mean, I meant the DUP and the Ulster
Union. They're a good bit more nuanced, though, than we give them credit for. I think we you see, the Good Friday Agreement and the stuff before it and after it wasn't just a kind of a flash in the pan. There actually were impacts. And within the DUP, I mean, I know some of them quite well. And it was interesting, Peter Robinson came out very strongly. And I know you could say he's yesterday's man. But really, if you take out Sammy Wilson, was there any other sort of medium level? Like, Geoffrey Donaldson wasn't saying an awful lot. Mm. Nigel Dodds was saying something very nuanced, very clever. He's a very impressive guy.
Is the problem not, though, that it's always Sammy Wilson that seems to be taking the phone calls from radio stations? I'm serious here. And he is...
Hardline.
He is hardline, basically. Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it. You know, that becomes the DUP position. He's also their Brexit spokesman.
But there are people in the DUP who have analysed the situation. And we always say, a bit condescendingly, I think, that they have a very short focus, kind of a 2 or 3 year focus, which is said about the political parties here as well, to be fair. But there are people in the DUP who have a vision for Northern Ireland in 50 years' time. And they know the numbers. And the numbers dictate politics. Like, you know, the numbers that vote for a particular issue, whatever kind of referendum or whatever, general election or whatever, and the numbers up there are almost certainly moving more towards Europe.
Majority
towards Europe as well. So, I mean, I think the DUP took a punt on being against it for the historical reason, assuming that there was no way in the world that the British public would be foolish enough to vote for
like Boris Johnson did. assuming he could get up on his high horse and campaign against this and sure he could be defeated and be grand.
And there is that risk. And sometimes we all take the lazy way out. But there are people there who think,
like the one thing that does, I mean, I keep talking about beef, but you know, I suppose it's an industry I know, but it's one that's really important to Clare. I mean, if Brexit comes down, like, what is going to happen to Northern Irish agriculture? Mm. What is going to happen to Irish agriculture? And nobody has any answers. And we're 4 months out, and I would hope, that there's negotiation going on and that there's a plan B being developed in Agriculture House and in the Department of Finance and everywhere. And, you know, we assumed, and I don't this is going to sound churlish, and I don't mean it to be churlish, Tony, but like, we assumed that there was a plan A, B, C and D when all of the things were falling apart at the time you described, and then there wasn't even really a plan A, much less a plan B, C and D. And well, maybe
the four-point plan that the government agreed.
Yeah, no, I know.
2010, 2011. But I mean, the new government said they would undermine immediately and ran with, because there was no other choice.
But that plan A was brought in a suitcase into Dublin Airport by the IMF. I mean, let's not pretend otherwise. It wasn't. I mean, the Department of Finance showed itself to be completely, have no idea what was going on, had no projections, had no idea. I mean, there was no control of the banking sector at the time. And I would be afraid that there isn't a plan B being developed now. I mean, I'm not here to talk about the past, but rather the present.
A lot of things in the suitcase were thrown out, though, and weren't accepted. The plan that was accepted.
I accept that.
I want to go back to this, and I'm going to finish with one question for you, and for you only, Mr. Hayes. Is Joe Public fed up of all this? Have they turned off the radio the last 15 minutes?
No, no. I mean, I'm talking about my siblings in Britain, right? And etc.
Here in Ireland,
but I'm just saying we're quite engaged with it, really. Yeah, people are keen to find out because they're looking at foodstuffs being dearer or perhaps not available, which is very critical. Not being able to immigrate to Britain, you know, which, you know, would be a traditional place for immigrating even for a few years. So all that consideration is very important. And I know from talking to people, their mind in their money now for Christmas, really, because we don't know what's going to happen after. And it does affect individuals on the ground.
Absolutely, indeed. Let us know your thoughts at home. 086 1800 964.
Clare FM's Morning Focus with Gavin Grace.
But we're going to talk about modern day politics. And Tony Killeen, you've talked about it a little bit already, but did Micheál Martin have any option but to say, OK, let's do another 18 months of the confidence and supply agreement?
Well, supposing he had said, we'll pull them down, we're sick of them, blah, blah, which Fianna Fáil people would love to do, quite frankly, of course. And supposing the likeliest outcome became the outcome of Brexit in 3 or 4 months' time.
Of a no deal.
Who gets blamed for leaving the country with no government and almost certainly in a situation where a government can't be formed? You know. So he's been around so long that he's able to, I mean, his nature is to look at these things. I mean, I served in the department with him for 3 years. I know him really well. I know how he thinks about these things. And he would, you know, every politician gets blamed for looking after themselves in every party. But ultimately, he wants to, you know, not be responsible for putting the country in jeopardy, which it would be.
It would rankle, though, with membership, both inside the parliamentary party and I would say in particular outside of it, that it appears that there's nothing in return. That Fianna Fáil have just said, let's carry on.
And there isn't anything in return.
Why not? Why isn't there something on housing and something on health? Which should be...
I think the reason for that is that so little, so close to zero of what was agreed in the programme for government or whatever the programme for whatever this is called now has happened. That it was felt that there was no point putting a whole new set of proposals forward.
Don't promise it because you're not going to deliver.
Because a very small proportion of what was agreed 2 years ago or whenever it was has been delivered. So you stick with that and you see out the end of Brexit and hope to God that the best option becomes the outcome in the UK. And if it does become the outcome, suppose they do go back to the people and suppose that they're staying in, then, in my view, the Taoiseach will call an election straight away because he'll say, I'm dead the great man. You know.
Okay, so we could see.
July, maybe, you know.
So not necessarily 2020. I've got my summer holidays booked for July. Dermot, your own thoughts on this particular one? I mean,
the election.
It was always hard to see any other outcome.
I know, excuse me, no, but the election wasn't over a few wet days when Fianna Fáil decided that they'll have an agreement with Fine Gael, really. And since then, they have been cohabitating. They might as well get married because of the same philosophies. Yeah, yeah. They've done nothing as regards housing or hospitals. They've privatised a lot of hospitals by stealth over the years, bit by bit. Mm. They've privatised the health services.
But you're going back to different governments on that one, obviously. Pardon? You're going back to different governments. That's gone on for more than just 3 years.
I'm going back to the present system. The present system, when Fianna Fáil said they'd join up with Fine Gael effectively and support Fine Gael, and they've continued on till next year and the year after, really. So they might as well join together and get married because they've done nothing collectively, Fianna Fáil, not Fine Gael, about housing or health. You know.
What else could have been done? financially, we're still not in the best place, although I know things have improved an awful lot.
It's about choices.
Well, what choices?
About surplus. Hmm? We have a budget surplus.
It's all about
we have a budget surplus, end of. Yeah. We have huge amounts of land owned. Well, the Labour Party's achievements in government were scant. But one of them was that public lands were not sold off, be they Caolte or be they public lands in Ennis or Shannon or anywhere else. They weren't sold off. There are land banks all over the country owned by the state, and there's a budget surplus.
Okay, but the budget surplus is relatively modest, and you have the Fiscal Advisory Council telling us that we're economically on very shaky ground. Yeah. If we were to go and put in billions and billions, which I know actually is the plan, but if we were to ramp up and in a more short term, put billions into house building.
How many billions have they already spent in HAP and hotels, etc.?
Subsidising
money and housing.
I don't understand. I really don't understand. But I mean,
have we the personnel to
and Tony
them?
Are much longer. And
have we the people to build the houses? The skills? I mean.
Well, I mean, unless we start building houses, we're not going to get... I mean, how do you bring on builders? You start building and you get apprentices and you get the whole thing moving again. And that hasn't happened. I'm not saying that's Fianna Fáil's fault, but I think there's also a reality that all of this has helped the banks to sort out their balance sheets. Mm-hmm. There's no longer a whole load of negative equity. There's people the banks are now in the position whereby there were people who weren't paying for various reasons that weren't able to pay or in sometimes people with second and third homes decided that they'd pocket the rent and not pay. And that rent coming from the state and they're pocketing it and not paying the mortgage. But at least those houses are no longer in negative equity. So the banks are in a position to move on them should they choose to. So I'm not convinced that this is not connected to the banks, the stranglehold they still maintain within the Department of Finance and the stranglehold they maintain over budgetary thought in Ireland, and the fact that this has worked hugely to the benefits of the banks' balance sheets and therefore their share price. And of course that feeds back into the fact that the state owns AIB and the share price of AIB is important to the economic stability of the state. So it's a very vicious circle, but certainly the people who are homeless are very far from the consideration of those who are setting policy, in my view.
When you talk to grassroots people in Fianna Fáil, really, they're totally very unhappy with their relationship with Fine Gael. They can't believe that they're...
I don't understand. I mean, Tony does, obviously, but I don't understand where Micheál Martin is coming from, because they're in this situation. Yeah. The longer they're in it, the less they can differentiate themselves. Tony said they're two very different parties. I don't dispute that. But, you know, the Labour Party and Fine Gael were two very different parties. And at the end of 5 years in government together, even the leadership of the Labour Party, I think, had very little to say for itself to differentiate us other than, oh, well, we're for repeal the 8th and should then transfer to Fine Gael. It was shocking stuff. But Fianna Fáil are going down, strangely, because they dodged a bullet, as Tony said in 20... Tony didn't say it. I said that they, in 2011, when they got leadership of the opposition and they were able to maintain a very separate identity to Fine Gael, to that government, and maybe separate themselves a little bit from the pain that was the balancing the books and all of that. But now they're in there, and the longer they stay there, the less that they can separate themselves from Fine Gael.
But very briefly, because I want to bring Tony back in, is it not the case that maybe in his private thoughts that Micheál Martin is thinking he should have jumped out 6 months ago? To do so now would be very problematic.
Well, I never knew why they didn't go when Enda Kenny was still leader, and there were various policing scandals that, of course, Peter Charlton has now put to bed.
Tony, we'll move on from that particular one, but in terms of Fianna Fáil, should he have gone a few months ago?
Look, my heart would tell me that we do, you know, Fianna Fáil as a party needs to differentiate itself very clearly from Fine Gael and government, particularly when, you know, Dermot talks from his heart about people with health issues and people with no house and all that. Of course, the huge majority of Fianna Fáil people would love to be in a position to be in government and do something really constructive about that, and they're not. And to make it worse, they're stuck in a... Is relationship the right word with Fine Gael, you know, who are probably the party that they have the least in common with in a whole lot of ways. So, but on the other hand, you have to look at the reality of where the country is at, and in my view, the current financial situation is very similar to the situation in 2006-2007. And at that stage, we were in
strong but shaky.
Isn't that more like when McCreevy was sent a pecking to Brussels when he wanted to sort of, quite as fragile. When was McCreevy sent off?
He was sent in 2004 after a disastrous council and European elections and a huge outcry from the rank and file Fianna Fáil people that we were pulling things back far too sharply, which McCreevy was doing. Mm. Like, if McCreevy had been left another 2 years, a big chunk of the suffering that happened in 2010 and 11 and 12 and 13 wouldn't have happened, because the 30 billion of adjustments, as
would have been much smaller,
his name, would have only been 12 maybe, and would have been more manageable. But why I think it's the similar is that we based a lot of our spending on the availability of finance, as it turns out, from the construction sector. The government is now in a position, and they haven't a lot of options, where they're doing it on the basis of corporation taxes that they know are finite in terms of amounts and in terms of duration. It's very similar.
Tony, there's more and more people working. They're getting more taxes from the ordinary people on the ground.
A lot of them are in very low-paid employment.
But still getting taxes.
And that's part of the problem. Yeah. An awful lot of people who are working can't afford to buy a house.
Okay.
In fact, they can barely afford to live.
Real country we're living in. I need to take a break. We'll be back in 2 minutes' time.
If it matters to you, let us know. Contact us now. 1850 400 964 or email focus@clare.fm.
I want to finish with our Friday panel of Tony Colleen, Dermot Hayes and Michael McNamara this morning by moving away from politics, but actually talking about another panellist who often joins us at this time of the day. Michael Vaughan from Lahinch has been at the centre of a story which hit headlines this week. It was a quest that he had embarked upon on social media, and he has, after putting out a quest and putting a call out to secure holy water and to get it, well, he had the water, he needed to get it to the States. Long story short, he managed it and it was flown over, and it is being offered to a young person who is sick, as I understand it, in the United States, and we wish them all the very best. And I just said I'd ask our Friday panel, are you a superstitious lot? Holy water or whatever else it might be.
Wrong man you're asking there, though.
You're not a fan, I take it?
Well, I wish Michael the best of luck and his friend in the States the best of luck and good health, etc. But as regards the effect of holy water could have on somebody, completely atheist around that.
You're an atheist.
That's the one completely.
Okay, fair enough. Would you be, Tony?
Well, I'm an ordinary run-of-the-mill Catholic who goes to Mass every weekend. And, you know, nowadays, you know, you'd nearly be embarrassed to say that, really. But anyway, I'm probably gone past the stage of being embarrassed about anything. But I do believe that in the human, that there is a spiritual dimension. And I believe that sometimes we neglect it at our cost, as individuals and as a society. Now, I'm not saying necessarily that one spiritual orthodoxy is more valid than another. It may well not be. But you know the way when people are put on a placebo medicine.
Yes, and I was going to come back to that on a very similar point.
And it has this hugely positive effect. Even if you excluded all spirituality, there's that much benefit in holy water. I think there's a little more. Sometimes I think that the signs and the symbols around religions, including Christianity, are misleading and unhelpful. But I do think that there's a community strength in a religion when it's positive and when it has a good philosophy that is very helpful to individuals and community. And I do think that there's a part of the human psyche that has a yearning in that area.
And irrespective, Dermot, of the religion side of things, and I fully respect that, don't get me wrong, but irrespective of that, I mean, as Tony mentioned, placebos, even just the power of people looking after you and well-being, okay, it doesn't cure everything, obviously, but feeling better can make your health feel better.
I was going to say, Diana, I'm a great man for the old hugs now and again, you know? and hugging somebody, and family hugs or friendship hugs, really. Mm. And I can feel good from that, really. And be nice to each other. That's feel good from really.
And I know it's different to holy water, but you know that if you can lift a mood, lift a spirit.
When I go to a beautiful place or a nice place, or I can feel content and happy inside myself, there is no doubt. But we're part of a cosmos. We're a part of a worldwide and obviously a galaxy. We're part of that, and we're just transient, really. So we're going to grow and die, etc. And it's end of story.
It's a tradition that a lot of people still put a lot of stock into.
Well, I mean, I suppose I wouldn't be even as good a Catholic as Tony. I'd be a fairly bad Catholic, to be honest. But, you know, I was in I was in a court case fairly recently, and it was fairly heavily covered by Clare FM and lots of media. But I'll tell you, I blessed myself going out that morning.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Just
I'd say the same. I'd say the same about when I was very sick with cancer, and particularly when I was going through 6 months of chemotherapy, and I was really, really sick. And I don't ever consider myself a good Catholic. I consider myself a kind of a conforming Catholic, more than a good one. You know? And I wouldn't say I'm a good Christian, because that's really hard. You know, the Catholic bit's not too bad. It's easy enough to do. But the Christian thing is very challenging to do. But I'll tell you, when I was in the lows with the chemotherapy and in very bad shape after the surgery, I was well able to pray.
Yeah,
I was pretty good. I'd say I was up there with the best of them.
I can't
believe it. Who said there was no in a foxhole, you know, in the Second World War when they used to dig down and the tanks would roll over them and they'd come up after them.
Yeah. Well, then, just a little story now. When I've been in hospital a good number of times, 1968, and they came around with the last rites to me, you know. On a few occasions.
I never knew that.
I did, it was quite close, yeah. But anyway, I just kind of politely refused, really, you know.
God.
And because it's only.
You're sticking to your bones.
Yeah, well, it's also upset me the fact that somebody even thought that I'd put the go.
I can understand that part as well. Well, look, you're still here and fighting strong. If I don't see any, is have a very wonderful Christmas and a Happy New Year and everything else as well.
Likewise to everybody.
And we will have some live music in studios, and that's coming up in just a couple of minutes' time. It's Morning Focus here in Clare FM.
Join the conversation in Clare on Facebook, Twitter, or call 1850 400 964.